that we review the waters of purification for before we proceed any further on the peace offering. And so that's what we're going to do tonight. You got to remember that everything in the Old Testament and every one of the things that were going on in the temple were there to show as a moving picture. Everything was symbolical. Spiritual realities were conveyed through this natural phenomena that took place through outward signs. But every physical defilement would point to and carry with it its spiritual counterpart. And those spiritual defilements are what the waters of purification, or the waters, have to do with. And this is something that's been lost in the modern church. Nobody knows about this stuff. And it's sad. Now, this was especially true with everything that had anything to do with birth or death. Anything that had anything to do, all connected with the origin of life and with death, implied defilement and required purification. Think about that. Every aspect of birth and every aspect of life was carried with it. It was defilement. Now that has to give you a hint. No one can look at the law and hear with any kind of understanding and know that every act of birth and every act of death was an act of defilement without speculating that, okay, that must mean that this is a picture because it's coming from a clean place into an unclean place. And the horizon is what causes the defilement. You see?
No, I didn't run that by
you. Okay. Jesus said that no man can come to the Father but he that no man can ascend to the Father but he that descended from him. Okay? If everything in here by the law that's connected with birth or death is an act of defilement, then that must mean, if we think about it, that the horizon between birth and death, there's something similar in it, but also that it is going from a clean place into an unclean place. You descend down, you go from clean to unclean, and where you pass the horizon in birth, and when you pass the horizon in death, it's unclean.
And those who are around it.
Right. Anything that touches those things that are around it, anybody that touched, that's why for the high priest during the day, much of the time, but specifically during the time of Yom Kippur, the high priest could not go near his wife if his wife was having a baby. If his father died, his mother died, anybody, he couldn't go near it. He couldn't go near him because, and that's the picture that that the duty of that act of Yom Kippur is more important than any mother or father or life or death or birth. But everything was a picture. Everything was symbolic. Now, what we're connected with, ouch, all of the waters of purification, they all have to do with purifying someone that is touched, going from birth or the things connected with birth, or going to death and the things connected with death. Think about it. Adultery is connected with birth. Leprosy is connected with death. Touching a dead body is obviously connected with death. So all, huh?
Is
issues are simply living death. All of these things, yeah, issues are like leprosy, they're walking death. All of these things are connected with that horizon between birth and death, between olam, or eternity, and time. So, everything about the waters is connected with that interface. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. It's impossible for a being like us to go through life without needing the waters. I was shocked when you said that Jesus Christ had to be purified from the waters.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That was shocking, but it's not shocking.
Now, a woman who had given birth was unclean for 40 or 80 days, depending on whether it was a male or a female. She then had to offer for her purification a lamb for a burnt offering and a turtle dove or a young pigeon for a sin offering before she could get back even into the temple. Before she could be back in a... You don't understand. Hear me.
To offer it for her?
Huh? She had to offer it. Listen, the temple isn't a place that they went to worship. Do you understand that? It isn't like a church. That's what gets me about churches. They call churches the house of God. Nobody went to church at the temple. It was a place. It was a hospital. It was birth and death. It was a place where you got defiled and undefiled and cleansed and de-cleansed. And life took place, but it wasn't church in the temple.
Yeah, it's just thinking we had to go this week to the government place to get a building permit. It's like you had to go there to get a being permit.
You had to be, yeah. You had to go get a permit. You had to get an I am permit.
Walk down the street.
Okay, now. There are three kinds of sacrifices which form a separate, totally separate group. Remember, we've talked about every of these. But there's the scapegoat, which takes place in Yom Kippur. The red heifer, which is the what? Offering of the red heifer? For?
Ashes.
Ashes the red heifer for?
For the
water. For what? Of what?
Of all these
things.
Huh?
Adultery?
All these things.
No. Only one of those.
Oh.
Leprosy.
Oh, leprosy. Hey, yeah, I meant leprosy.
Leprosy. Keep guessing.
Okay. And a living bird that was dipped in the water. No, I mean, excuse me.
Huh? I thought that was used for...
I'm the touching of the dead body was the one for the ashes of the red heifer.
That's what I meant.
This is... The living bird, which was dipped in water and blood and let loose, that was for leprosy. Okay. Now, all those things were done, these three were all either wholly offered or completed outside the camp. You understand? The Old Testament admittedly had within its sanctuary no provision for spiritual wants.
For what?
The Old Testament had no provision for your spiritual desires.
I mean, like
they just symbolically pointed at something. The removal lay outside of its earthly sanctuary and beyond its symbols. It can only point at them. In other words, no one was ever cleansed in the Old Testament. They only were cleansed if they saw Jesus in the cleansing. Just like no one is cleansed by Jesus now, if you just, unless, I mean, it has to be appropriated.
Oh, the ritual, you mean the ritual?
Yeah.
The blood of bulls.
They didn't clean anybody. Okay, spiritual death, personal sin, personal guilt lay beyond the reach of the temple. Now, you remember what the three things are, three kinds of waters. They're the waters that are mixed with the ashes of the red heifer. There are the waters that are mixed with the priests. You remember when, after they walked around on the floor for a while, and the waters mixed with the priests.
Oh, jealousy.
For the waters of jealousy. And what else?
The blood.
The waters that are mixed with the blood of the bird that are put on the tip of the ear and the tip of the nose. And see, we're supposed to do that every time we have a new priest. We're supposed to put it on the tip of the right ear, the thumb of the right hand, on the great toe. Well, that's what was done with the other one. So there's three. Those are the three waters. They dealt with touching the dead body or raw flesh, adultery, and leprosy. Leprosy also is the biggest one. Is the meaning of leprosy is raw flesh to us now. But what is touching the dead body? What is the ash? What is this thing? Remember we talked about this? The ash is the red heifer. Solomon understood all the mysteries of the universe except the ashes of the red heifer. No one in history has ever understood the ashes of the red heifer, according to the ancient Jews. Why would you take and burn a female cow that had to be red on the outside? Had to burn it and do it at an exact point so you cross the brook Kidron so that they could see the Holy of Holies. And they had to do the strange rite in the pit and make sure everything got burned right. And there were only seven. And you couldn't start it off. Like right now, there's no way that anybody could decide they're going to build a temple and start this. Because they can't. There has to be a continuity. There's only been seven heifers in all of history.
Female sacrifice that existed from the beginning.
Right. And it had the ashes of a new one that was burned. Can you believe how valuable those were if there are only seven in all of history?
And each had to be mixed with the prior.
Each had to be mixed in a container and contained in a container made of the dung of the heifer whose ashes it was. But it reflects us. We are the red heifer. And it's contained in what we think with the dung of us. And we're burned in the fire. And the ashes from it are the cleansing. Mixed with the water, the washing of water of the Word. I mean, we've...
That's like a limitless supply of water mixed with like one particle of ash.
Yeah. There's all kinds of stories about that. How many pieces of ash are required per...
But with only seven heifers,
you wouldn't put as much.
You wouldn't waste
that. Again, we don't have to worry about like the Pharisees do about finding the ashes of the red heifer. We are the ashes of the red heifer. We don't have to worry about finding the Ark of the Covenant. We contain the Ark of the Covenant. Pine and sorrow for those people that are still out looking for something. Yeah. Remember, the ashes obtained from the red heifer, though, they had to be taken and mixed with the waters of Shiloh, or Siloam, which means the waters of being, the Shiloam means sent. It's the ones, the living waters that came out of the upper part of the brook Kidron. That was the spring that came out of the side of the east gate. Just above the dump. Right about here. Ashes of the Red Heifer is something you can't understand intellectually. You have to feel it. The rite in which the ashes are mixed with hyssop and running water, living water. The water was used in the removal of uncleanness of a person or thing which had been in contact with a dead body, and removing the defilement from the booty taken in war, or the booty that was taken, that was, how did they say?
Like all the dead people, probably.
Not necessarily. No. It was all of the things, where Israel robbed Egypt.
Had to
have the ashes of the red heifer. Am I touching any of you? I mean, do you hear it? What? Oh, okay. The ashes were obtained by burning the heifer completely. Nothing could be left. Her skin and her flesh and her blood with her dung. Everything had to be burned. There could be nothing remaining. Yea, though we have known Christ after the flesh, yet now henceforth know we him no more. Yea, now hereby we know no man after the flesh. The moment we know no man after the flesh, then the ashes, the thing, the heifer is completely consumed. Throughout the law, the removal of ritual and physical impurity was removed by water, preferably running water. Where the impurity was unusually great, mere water was not felt to be adequate. Various substances were mixed with it in order to increase its efficacy. In some cases, blood, some cases, dust, some cases, gold, in some cases, the ashes of the red heifer. Well, of all of those, the ashes were considered most valuable. Okay. In the making of the ashes, the blood is burned. This is the only place where the blood is burned in all of the law. Also, here alone is the burning, the preliminary act. In other words, is the in all other cases, it is the chief act. I mean, this is a big difference. Here, the animal is a female. For most all other cases, the animal is a male. Now, the female was used in the following, and other sects, and it was, the female was used in the purification ceremony in Deuteronomy 21. You've got these notes. I'm not going to read these. The one important part that the only important part I want to bring to light tonight, though, is the female was used as the sacrifice when the Nazarite terminated the vow.
Female animal.
Now, other requirements for the ashes of the red heifer. The heifer must be red, the color of blood, or the color of ripe grain in some cases. Had to be without spot. There had to be no white, black or white hair. There could be no blemish. There had to have never been a yoke upon the animal. It had to be killed by the successor of the high priest. Very, very early in Israel, animal husbandry and genetic engineering came into being. Because they had to try to find and to breed animals so that they could find the animals, it would be without blemish and without spot. The requirement for the red heifer, however, was 100 times more demanding than the requirement for the other offerings. I mean, they inspected every follicle. They, in many cases, killed 100, 200, 300 heifers during the time they were doing one. In one of the places it says thousands. Because when they cut them open, if they found an impurity inside, the animal had to be destroyed.
And that's why it took them 50 years to...
Yeah. That's why what they did is, remember, when the sacrifice, well, it was obvious when it was alive and obvious, and the sacrifice was not suitable, sometimes the sacrifice was allowed to be used for other things. I mean, you know, they could take it and use it for something else. But with this one and some others, which I won't go into, if it was a live animal that had been set aside for the sacrifice and they found a blemish on it, it had to be taken alive and by a barge out and into the exact middle of the Dead Sea, and the millstone was hung around its neck, the used millstones. And it was drowned alive.
You can really see this is the female of Christ.
Yeah, this is us. Now, all these animals that they killed and cut open, the same thing had to happen. They had to they couldn't do anything with these things. They had to take that stinky, smelly animal and get it to the dead thing and get it out. Get it out of the way. Get it over to the Dead Sea, where it was somehow encased in something and a millstone tied around it and buried in the bottom of the Dead Sea. Now, you understand here that if there is the slightest part of you externally who has not the righteousness of Christ, who has not taken on, who is still worried about being right in something, who is still worried about having their own way in something, that has to go, or it will be a millstone hung around your neck and you'll be taken to the Red Sea. As a teacher, if you in the slightest way ever teach someone that they need to change, in other words, they need to become righteous in their own strength, what you have done is you've caused that little one to be offended. And you then will be taken to the Dead Sea, metaphorically, and a millstone will be hanged around your neck. Because you see, as the teacher, you became the unacceptable sacrifice internally because of what came out of your mouth. You understand? Mm-hmm. You caused a little one to be offended because you caused that little one to think he had to change and become righteous in his own strength. It's a great responsibility to be a teacher. Of course, at the end, that's why, I mean, that's why we commend ourselves openly. We're gut shot, we're gut ripped. We commend ourselves openly to every man's conscience in the sight of God. Let there be no need for subconscious righteousness of my own. That's why in the Nazarite vow and at these things we turn the heat up so there's no case where there's resentment, there's no case where there's disappointment, there's no case where there is anything but joy and fellowship. Because the heat turned up is what reveals the inward. Yeah. The blood was sprinkled seven times with a finger, but not on the altar, but towards the sanctuary. Another totally different thing. The whole animal was burned, adding the cedar wood, the hyssop, and the scarlet as it was burning. The ashes were to be gathered by a man who was clean, and then they were laid up outside the camp in a clean place. The priest that burned them and the priest that gathered them were unclean, which is really interesting. And he that was unclean, that took the ashes and put them in a vessel, poured upon them living water, dipped hyssop in the living water. On the third and the seventh days they was sprinkled him who was to be purified. And the clothes were washed and the flesh was bathed. And then he became clean on the evening of the seventh day. But on that third day, if something was wrong, then he had to start over again. That's why normally they had to go to Jerusalem 10 days in advance. The tent, our house, and all the vessels had to be similarly purified. And lastly, he that touched the water, the priest that performed the act of touching the water, was unclean until evening.
Did they have to go from the temple to these houses and places?
Or sometimes, yeah.
You know,
that's what they did sometimes.
Yeah.
But the guy had to come to the temple first. Mm-hmm. He that sprinkled must wash his clothes, and he was unclean until evening. That means he was outside the camp. He was the guy, he laid down his life because if time ended, he was legally dead. I mean, he was legally not part of Israel. And he was the priest, the highest, the priest that...
So he bears a reproach outside the camp.
That's right. Death carried greatest defilement, and its ceremony most complete. Touched everyone. Must have... Just think of the awe that was connected with a ceremony. Because it touched everyone all the time. I pray they didn't make... The mysterious commonplace, but they probably did. They're doing the red heifer stuff.
Well, it seemed like you'd have about half of Israel always unclean outside the camp till evening for some kind of thing going on.
It was. In fact, you may have had them all.
Yeah.
A sin, or touching this, was defilement. It doesn't matter whether you think it was fair or unfair. It didn't have anything to do with what you thought about. You were unclean until the ashes of the red heifer came upon you. The high priest, you understand this? This is interesting. Anyone who participated in this activity was defiled. Therefore, the high priest was prohibited from offering the red heifer. It was only his successor who could do it. It showed that in this system there was no one who could, by his office or holiness, could take away sin. In this particular ceremony, the priests have almost nothing to do. The laymen are the chief functionaries. The killing of the heifer. I read something in the current Wittenberg Door about how modern churches are designed to offend the sense of community. They're designed to sit in rows in a pew with a liturgy, with a person who was up there somewhere, and there's, you know, it's a forcedness to say, okay, we'll turn around and have fellowship, you know, okay, fellowship is fine. Hi, my name is Ollie. Welcome. God bless you, brother. But think about it. The churches themselves are designed to be the enemy of community.
Even more so than work or anything else. You have ranks, but they're not near so regimented as what it is at church. You can't cross even to the next row.
I mean, has anybody ever tried to just walk up there and go on to the...
I have something to say.
Yeah, I want to talk.
Or try to interrupt a sermon.
Or your microphone.
Or interrupt a burial, have you ever... Talmud says the two hairs from the same follicle disqualify the heifer. Talmud says that even if a cloth had inadvertently been laid upon the animal during the time of it being washed, it had carried a burden, therefore it was illegal. Do you see why we as the type, they as the red heifer, we as the reality, we have to enter the Sabbath rest. We cannot have taken on one burden.
It's one more than set burden on the Lord.
There can't be one thing that you take on responsibility for. Can't be one thing. Really, come down, bottom line, it's not one thing you can take seriously. Not in all of time and space. Everyone by the law, everyone was subject to the second death. You were subject to the second death if you touched or were defiled by the stain of death. If that stain was not removed, even if it was touched, you were touched accidentally, you were eternally separate from God and the brethren.
It's weird. I never thought about it.
What did you say?
Second death.
He said it's weird. I never thought about it that way.
Yeah. Right. Before that.
Everyone by the law. Again, you understand, the reason that this has importance is it's the law. It's the way the thing works. Doesn't matter what you think about it. Okay. Everyone by the law was subject to the second death. You were subject to the second death if you touched or were defiled by the stain of death. If the stain is not removed, you are eternally separate from God and the brethren. Okay, this defilement lasted for 7 days. Required special kind of purification, extended not only to those who touched the dead, but to the house or the tent where the body had lain, and all open vessels that were in there. To enter a house which was unclean, or come in contact with the smallest bone, or partake of the feast for the dead, rendered you ceremonially unclean for 7 days. Now, what's the feast for the dead? Somebody read Hosea. So, chapter 4. What time is it?
5 after 9.
I'll find the Feast of the Dead later.
Is it just to emphasize this point of how far from life death is, or?
Well, no. It's the bottom line is to emphasize the fact that for you to know that you cannot be saved. It's only the life. Remember, it's only that which came from God that we started this evening with that can return to God. It's Christ in you, the hope of glory. You must be transfigured by the renewing of your mind. The renewing of your mind says, I see that. I see that the flesh, there's no flesh and blood shall not inherit the kingdom. No part of it. I see that the carnal mind is enmity against God. Cannot be subject to God. I see that my only hope is the cross, running to the cross. Now this just gives us more reasons to run to the cross, because now this isn't connected with sin, this is just connected with accidents. And, well, I mean, how many, you know, we're probably, you know, this is the type, is the horror movies of, how many bodies are under the ground, the climbing, coming up through the...
How many were burned in ash and dust of the wind? How many were killed in explosions and blown parts here and there?
The point is, you cannot be anything but unclean. That's why we need him.
Yeah. So we, I mean, the reality for us is we're encased in dead bodies.
That's right. If you, I mean, this is the great one. You understand this? If you, I write unto you that know the law. The law, our understanding of the law, if you take the scriptures that talk about it, says that now I am crucified. I am dead. That means to touch me, if I touch me, I am levitically unclean. If I give my life any importance by touching, meaning joining alliance with this flesh,
taking control
of it, I mean, there's no other point. That's why, I mean, you got to come back to the first principle. Christ said, do you want to be my disciple? Abandon yourself, pick up your cross. Now, I told you about, Doug and I were talking about this, but I told you about that there is no place in the law where anything except a domesticated animal was suitable for the sacrifice, including the red heifer. The red heifer had to be tame. Now, that's why Jesus said, the yoke of Christ is the yoke of becoming domesticated. Take my yoke upon you. Enroll in my schools. That's what most theologians say it means. No, it means, you know, sort of. But it really means yoke. Just become domesticated. Stop the wildness. My yoke is easy. It's easy if you abandon yourself. My burden is light. Okay. Anyone who was defiled in turn rendered everything and everyone which he touched unclean for 7 days. I mean, we're running. We're going in here, right?
This is geometric.
Exponential.
Now, for priests and Nazarites, the law was even more stringent. They could never defile by touching any dead except those of the nearest kin. In other words, it's only the only time that we who have taken a Nazarite vow could go to a funeral if it's our mother, our father, our husband, our wife, or sons or daughters. The high priest could not do that. He couldn't even go or his own wife, or children, or parents. You got to see that this truth was constantly kept in the eyes of the people through all the years of the law. They were constantly aware. Remember how, like, we're sort of aware of the Nazarite vow every once in a while, not because we want a Coke or something, or a cigarette. You know, I mean, just think what it was like then. There was no time in which this stuff wasn't in their awareness, in their minds.
Yeah, because people are always getting bored and people are always dying.
Could a child be defiled?
Of course.
So they had to be also be brought.
That's right. You got to see that any contact, even accidental, with death rendered fellowship with God and with the brethren impossible. That's what's your bottom line.
Did this apply in war?
Huh?
Did this apply in war?
Of course. All the types of Levitical uncleanness or defilement can ultimately be traced back to death. But it's two great outward symptoms. Leprosy and issues or fluxes. Somebody read Job 14, verse 4. You got to remember that all these laws that we're reading are carnal. They're carnal ordinances. When God talks about, when the New Testament talks about carnality, it's not talking about what you think carnality means. It's talking about ordinances. It's talking about the law most of the time, the carnal.
14:4.
Yeah.
Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Not one.
Okay. The Hebrew, the rabbis say that's translated incorrectly. It should say, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Question mark. Is it not the one?
Yeah, not one, but God.
Is it not one? And then they give these examples. Abraham is a clean thing which came out of Terah. Terah was considered the totally unclean because he was such an idol, his idol. Hezekiah was the clean thing that came out of Ahaz, the evil one. Josiah came out of Ammon. Mordecai came out of Shemaiah. Israel came out of idolaters. Christ comes out of you. And the New Jerusalem comes out of this world. It's time that you stopped looking at the outward appearance of anything. You understand? Now, the outward appearance are the things that you can understand with your senses. That's what the outward appearance means spiritually.
I just realized I had a right, you know, it's like a right perception, you know, that I get all freaked and weird when I look, when I hear this and I look in my flesh. Or mm-hmm. That's the result.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a right thing that I should feel that way. And I always try and get around that perception, but that's the correct one.
Yeah, we try to do everything in the world to fight that. If there is a spot the size of a barley bean, half of a barley bean, the man is unclean. That means he's out. He's history.
The man or the heifer?
We're talking about the man. What causes him to be...
Leprosy.
If it covers the total body, he's clean. Now here's... There's some. Remember these? We talked about these before. A woman whose infant died in the womb, if the midwife puts her hand in and touches it, the midwife is unclean for 7 days. However, the woman is clean until the embryo comes out. As long as the uncleanness was in within her, it means she didn't know about it. I mean, she's clean.
Yeah.
When the dead body is in the house, the mother's womb, the house is clean, but when it comes out, the house is unclean. The person engaged in any part of the preparation of the red heifer from the beginning to the end are unclean. yet the heifer itself makes clean. The section dealing with the heifer contains seven mentions of seven things. That's too weird. Seven heifers, seven burnings, seven sprinklings, seven washings, seven uncleannesses, and seven cleannesses, and seven priests. Wow. That's the section in the where it's described in the law. And what account is a leper cleansed with the aid of the tallest of the tall trees, the cedar, and with the lowest of the low trees, the hyssop? He had exalted himself like the cedar, and he had been humbled, then humbled himself like the hyssop. Now this is in Ecclesiasticus 7:23. All things I have fully comprehended, but as regards the red heifer, I have examined, investigated, and inquired. And then I said, I will get wisdom, but it was far from me. I don't want to talk anymore.